Welcome to episode 110 of the Ron and Brian podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Ron and Brian podcast. Thank you for joining us. As always, I am joined by the man packing an M80 in his pants, Brian. Brian, welcome back to another week of the podcast. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, and I'm happy to report that not only am I safe and sound, but New York City has entered phase two. We are officially reopened, thriving. We are just, you know, gangbusters. We'll talk about it later. But yes, phase two, people.
All right. Let's maybe celebrate with a drink.
Drink of the week.
Drink of the week.
Sláinte.
Pause.
Drink of the week. Drink of the week.
And drink of the week. For those of you who follow us on Instagram, you saw that I made good with my word to deliver Brian all of his Broken Goblet Brewing beer this past weekend up in Queens there. Filled that beer fridge. I don't think you could have fit anything else in there. So tonight we are trying one of the crowlers. We are trying Broken Goblet's fucking Pilsner. Brian, it's a nice, supple 4.9%. The name of it comes from the fact that people kept saying, when are you going to make a fucking Pilsner? And they did. And I think it's fantastic. I know you're just trying it for the first time. How do you like it?
It is crisp, exactly the way you would want a Pilsner to be. It is not too, it's not overbearing in terms of its flavor. Personally, I would describe this as the perfect shower beer.
You now, wake, do you think about it. Shower on your own, or do you just shower with beer?
Well, if you're showering with beer, you're never showering alone. I see this as you wake up on a Tuesday morning, you're on your way, you know, you think to yourself, you're going to have a busy day in the office. I mean, Ron, you don't have to worry about this.
Understood, because I'm not working. I get it.
You've been out of work for a while. But this is, you know, you wake up, you're stressing about your hard day at work, and then you say to yourself, you know what, I need a little something to take the edge off. Well, who's going to be your friend while you're waiting for your conditioner to kick in? Well, this beer, Broken Goblet's fucking Pilsner. Jesus,
all right.
This is good.
So go to our friends at Broken Goblet in Bensalem, PA. They are reopened for patio service now that we have entered the green zone here. Go pick yourself up a couple of crowlers of that. We are going to mix things up a little bit this week. We do have a very special guest coming on momentarily. But in the meantime, let's make sure we get in our beefs. Still the best intro. Brian, what is your beef this week?
My beef this week is New York City stores not participating in phase two reopening, New York offices not participating in phase two. This past Monday, after what has been, in my opinion, as close to the dark ages, you know, the ordeal New York City has been through, and I'm sure we'll be giving some examples of it later. We finally got the go-ahead that offices could reopen at 50% capacity this past Monday. Also in phase two, outdoor dining was suddenly allowed, as well as in-store retail participation. And it broke my heart on Monday, reinforced again on Tuesday and Wednesday. A lot of stores are not open. A lot of offices are not being populated. For instance, my office building, Lower Manhattan, right there on Wall Street, where the capitalist swine dine. And one of the things that just broke my heart was speaking to one of the property managers, and they informed me that they were expecting 1,200 people to return to work on Monday.
And how many people did?
Let's do some math a little bit.
Okay.
If you're allowed only 50% and they're expecting 1,200, then that means that the building minimum housed 2,400 people prior to the shutdown. And in this past Monday, 70 people walked through the door. 70.
So not even, what is that, like 3.5% of what was being expected? 5%?
No, 120 people would have been
10%. 1%. Hey, I'm not good with math today.
Yeah, we're gonna let you slide on that one.
All right. Yeah, but can you blame people for not wanting to go back? And I mean, offices definitely. I think with retail, I mean, I don't know how it is in New York, but what we are seeing here is, you know, there are some places that are holding off to see how other places do with their reopening, to see what procedures work, what doesn't. You know, I think some of these businesses are a little afraid of being the litmus test for reopening and are waiting to see how some of these other companies handle it.
Ron, if we do not reopen, we are letting COVID win. We can't allow that to happen.
All right.
Just for instance, my dry cleaners and my laundromat still closed.
That's bad.
I have not done dry cleaning in 3.5 months. So I was all excited. Monday after work, I grabbed my laundry bag. I walked over to my laundry, closed, still closed.
Well, I hope for your sake that they open back up soon.
Bring back the Big Apple. We survived 9/11. Well, some people didn't survive 9/11.
I was going to say.
But the city as a whole, we came back. We will come back, New York City. You cannot hold us down. Speaking of that, Ron, what is your beef?
I mean, I guess maybe a minor beef, but companies that don't return your repeated phone calls, as we mentioned, I think it was a couple of podcasts ago, I had a little issue with a tree breaking off, hitting the house, damaged the roof, have some electrical issues. Now we've also have some water leakage issues. I mean, just some issues. And regardless, I mean, we're 2 weeks in, and I think today was the first day I got a roofing guy over today. Still no one for electric, still nothing for painting or water damage repair, because you just call people and they just don't call you back. It's extremely frustrating.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
And
to
you
hear.
Would think, you know, again, I try and, you know, I try and use small businesses and they, you know, you would think people could use the work, but apparently everyone's busy, or at least too busy for me.
Ron, maybe is it possible that, you know, with the state economy just reopening in Pennsylvania, that maybe they don't want to be the litmus test for how things will be rolling out?
Well, keep in mind, a lot of these companies did not need to close because they would have been deemed essential services.
I know. I was just trying to throw
you. You're just trying to mess with me.
It's what I do. What Fair I do enough. Best.
Well, we are excited about this. We do have a special guest this week. We are going to bring him into this Zoom chat now. Hopefully this will work. So we have joining us from down in Florida, Carlos Barbarena. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, sir, you did. You got
All
it right.
Fantastic. Carlos, in 2022, is going to be going up against little Marco Rubio for his Senate seat, running as an independent. Carlos, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm just a regular Carlos, not a bad hombre, a criminal or a rapist. you know, I think for me, the biggest thing that, how can I relate or why would I, you know, explain that I'm running is I'm Nicaraguan. And a lot of people don't realize that Nicaragua has a very special place in history with the U.S. government. And considering Trump uses, you know, another old senile president's mantra of make America great, there were just too many signs for me. So that's where it kind of started. Miami native. My parents arrived here in the 80s. I was 4 or 5 years old, and I've lived here my entire life.
So the one thing I always say with people getting into politics is you have to be, I think, a little bit crazy to want to get into politics with the atmosphere. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, do you think you bring a level of craziness to the table, or do you bring a level of stableness, or somewhere in between?
No, I'm knocking futs. No, hands down. Yeah. You have to be. I don't think the regular person can do this. You know, that said, I think anyone can do this as long as you have, you know, the will, you know, or the desire to help. And for me, as an introvert, you know, that shy, quiet kid that was always watching, you know, I have a lot of empathy. I don't show it because a lot of it relates into anger. And it took me a long time, you know, for me to get a hold of my anger and not kind of blame, you know, my past on it. But you absolutely cannot be anywhere in the middle. You have to be crazy.
Carlos, can you just tell me a little bit about your view of the state of Florida? Where is it at and where would you like to see it go?
I'm in South Florida, down in Miami. I'd say it's a banana republic. It's very unfortunate that we have leaders that don't believe in science. And I had this conversation with my father-in-law the other day. And I said, listen, the minute you start arguing facts, like, you're done. I don't want to hear it. Because facts cannot be argued. They're facts. And being a, you know, a data nerd and a science guy, that's where it ends for me. There's nothing about the nuances after that. These are the facts. They're undeniable. And there's nothing to argue. You know, it's unfortunate that these guys are basically, you know, pandering to daddy. That's what I say all the time. You know, they need to get daddy's permission. But it doesn't look good. And I think it's time. And I think for too long, I've been waiting for change to happen. And that's why I said, you know what? Listen, I maybe have a 3-5% chance of winning, right? The odds are against me. It's political suicide to, you know, go in as in no party affiliation, but that's how I'm registered, you know, and that's how I've been registered because I don't believe in anyone picking any sides. For me, it's what's right and what's wrong. And I think we need to get back to that. You know, I say it all the time. We talk about getting back to the basics and nobody does that. And we keep going back in circles and circles and circles, and we keep avoiding the very simple constructs that we teach our kids, right? So for me, that's really it, what I think needs to happen. And it's going to take my generation, Gen X, to get more involved because I believe we're the bridge to the millennials. You know, I was selling DSL when it was 1.54 megs, the modem. Millennials don't remember any of that. You know, we've kind of handed everything over to them. So for me, it's that generation that has to step forward and show everybody else. Listen, it's not just the old people, you know, it's somebody that maybe a little older than me, but not completely out of range and understands what we're going through.
Great.
So would now be a bad time for me to mention that I remember 14.4 dial-up?
Oh my God. I remember my first Seagate hard drive, 512 megs. I'm an old DOS guy. I'm still tinkering around. I'm a systems engineer. I got Microsoft certified. It's actually what keeps me employed. And I think that's a great way to segue into one of the things that I think is lacking. I think if society demands a specific set of skills, right? Like if you can't get a job without a bachelor's, then education, a bachelor's, the minimum should be free. And I think we've put too much emphasis on sending everyone to college. You know, I for sure as hell would never place my kids in $80,000 to $100,000 debt for a liberal arts degree. And I don't have anything against that. You know, if you want to do that, go for it. But understand that just because you've got that degree, it's not a one-way ticket, you know? They always give you the stat, are you going to make $1 million more? How the hell is that going to help me? That's maybe like, you know, if I'm lucky, 10 grand more a year, you know, maybe $100 a week by the time I'm done. What am I getting? $80 a week? But I'm still what? $100,000 in debt? So for me, that's something that has helped me because it was a certification. It cost me $8,000. I paid it. Am I still learning? Absolutely. But that's because I want to. And you can't teach that. You know, and I think when everybody talks about the basics, we have to get back to that, you know, stop talking and actually start doing, right? For me, I curse a lot. I mean, my mother will tell you that the first time she met my grandmother, all she heard was curse words. And she would say, it's the Queen's English, you know, and they curse so much. So I guess I picked it up from my grandmother. You know, I tell people, I curse like my grandmother, because to me, words don't matter. Actions, right? And it took me a long time to figure out Talking Heads, right? Because Talking Heads for me were a group, right? I'm an old rock guy. if you believe it or not, I'm a Led Zeppelin guy, right? And people find that, you know, but whatever. So Talking Heads, that's what they are, you know? And then I look at everybody that's out there. They don't represent me. You know, they don't know what it's like to have the power turned off because mom and dad couldn't afford things. You know, they don't know what it's like to stand in line, you know, food stamps and have my mother walk away because she had too much pride the first time she used that. They don't know that. So how does that represent us? You know, the majority of us. So, man, that's you know, I could talk about this for hours. And I think it was, for me, time to stop talking and actually, you know, go for it. What do I got to lose?
Listen, and especially in Florida, I mean, you know, we see you know, you've got Governor DeSantis, who always has a look on his face like he doesn't know what's going on. Rick Scott, who, I mean, you don't need to say much about him. Marco, people like Matt Gaetz. Agreed. You know, these are people that don't, I think, represent the common man. And something you just said resonated with me, because one of my childhood memories is, you know, I was raised by a single mother, and she had two jobs and couldn't make ends meet. And we waited in line for food stamps one time, and she was so embarrassed to have her kids see that she went out the next day and got a third job. And so that's how I got to where I am. Like, that's where I got my work ethic was seeing a mom that, you know, would work hard. And you see all these politicians, both on the left and the right, I think, that look at these as lifelong careers, easy paychecks, and we don't see a lot that gets done for the common person.
You're absolutely correct. And now that I'm getting a little more involved, my first bid was in 2010. I have a buddy of mine that ran for community council, and he calls me up and he's like, listen, the guy just doesn't want to do it anymore. It was literally 30 days before like the first round. So he goes, he drops off the paperwork for me. He calls me while he's in line, and it's like the nephew of one of the commissioners in line dropping off the paperwork. He beat me by like 8,000 votes. We had like 30 days, you know? That was my first introduction into, it doesn't really matter what anybody says, is because they're part of this family or they have this name. People recognize and they vote for it. 2010, for me, I was nowhere there. You know, my kids were young. Now they're all teenagers. So I said, you know what? It's time that I actually get out there and bring these conversations that nobody wants to have with me because I'm so passionate about talking about these things. That I'm that guy that, oh, that's okay, don't talk to Carlos about politics. You know? So let me give you an example. You mentioned healthcare. I spent 8 years in healthcare, and you can't sell me insurance because of what I saw. And my practice closed down in 2008. Back then, there were rumors. We were the largest general practice and the second largest provider for HIV patients. We managed over 300 HIV lives. At that time, huge fraud. So that was really an eye-opener into systemic failure. And I had witnessed systemic failure trying to go to college, because when I went to college, and we're talking community college, I was denied financial aid because I had worked my junior year, right? And they're like, whoa, you made like $8,000. Like, that went to help keep the lights on and food on the table. So that was my first, you know, the man in the machine, right? The rage against the machine. Petulance of youth, I shrugged it off and I moved on. But when I was in healthcare, and people would turn a blind eye, it really started to resonate, because I would tell people, there's a Medicare deduction in your paycheck, no matter what. So when you think it doesn't affect you, it does affect you. And the hundreds of millions of dollars that are wasted every year, right? So if we take a look at the current pandemic, it got away from us. There's nothing we can do. The only way we're going to be able to do anything is by testing, right? Because we need the data. That's how this works. Without the data, we're not going to be able to control. So it's going to continue to get away from us. And when you've got the leadership telling you everything is fine and nothing's going on, well, that's exactly what's going to happen. It continues to spread. One of the things that I saw, I have access through, ArcGIS, it's the map that they use, like 21,000 infections, you know? Those 21,000 people had contact, right? And just because they tested positive now, we have no idea how many more people they infected, right? So to me, that's systemic, right? We can do as much as we want it to stay home, you know, control our environment, be conscious of others, but it takes leadership, and I'm not seeing it anywhere. And it's taken too long already. You know, I've been working full time for 25 years, and it's not getting any better. It's not getting any better.
Well, you use the word leadership, and it almost feels like the people that have the power to change things, to make things better, are showing whatever you want to use that, whatever the term is, they're showing the opposite of leadership.
Yeah.
You're in Florida, you're looking at, you know, you mentioned the infection rates are, the media likes to use the word spiking, but really it's just steadily increasing on a daily basis. The number of people that are testing positive, number of people that are going into the hospitals, the ICU units that are starting to get crowded. I mean, listen, I'm here in New York City where, we got hit by this coronavirus terribly, and as somebody with the coronavirus antibodies, it's certainly not, this is not something that I would want somebody else to have to experience. But watching what's going on in the state of Florida, and having experienced what New York did, it's almost, I just have these visions of refrigerated trucks parked outside of hospitals, using forklifts to bring in corpses because the morgues are being are overloaded with bodies. That was our reality back, at the end of March. And you're asking yourself, we sacrificed. What did these other states learn in the process? And it's just absolutely frightening because you're seeing footage of public beaches, bars, and it's not just your state of Florida, but it's a lot of the southern states or whatnot. And you want to cry out. Where are the leaders who have any type of authority to say this is not acceptable anymore?
Yeah.
It would be great, it would be great to suddenly be able to see people who have the ability to make things better actually step in and start to do so. You're going to be running up against Marco Rubio. How would you describe his actions over the past couple months?
Inept, right? 100%. I think he's nothing but a puppet, a shill. I think he gets up there pandering at every opportunity that he can. Because he's obviously jockeying, to run again for president, right? That's just his bottom line. He talks about being, a Miami native. You can't catch that guy at his office down here. Now he's always, doing something else. We don't see him, And he, if you take a look at where his office is, that specific side of town, not the best, but maybe he lived there 30 years ago. He's not there anymore. He's in, a better neighborhood, and he sure as hell doesn't go there, even if his office is there. So I always tell people that, for me, coming from a communist country, seeing my parents fled for the opportunity, for a high school graduate to own a business, right? And to be able to succeed. Where is that going, right? Like, what are we doing? I understand what opportunity is, what freedoms are. And I think that's what society has taken for granted. Now, let's also talk about the dichotomy between money and health, right? Priorities. It's always money, 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 money. If there's no health, there's going to be no job. And I can tell you that I learned that, back in 2000 when I started, in healthcare. And here we are, 2020, and things haven't changed. They've gotten worse. And when you tell someone you think we have good healthcare, we're like ranked 20 something, as bad as a third world country. I mean, I have friends that were buddies of mine that have literally told me, go back to Nicaragua if you hate it here so much. What are you talking about, dude? This is it's we the people. Were you not paying attention in history class? Right? It's our government. We the people. But it's not. It's the few people that actually, and predominantly they're older, more conservative, right? So it takes for the youth to get up.
Now, definitely, you know, you're not affiliated with any particular party. Where do you tend to lean? I mean, obviously a little bit more towards the left, but what's kind of your platform in a nutshell that you'll be running on?
I always joke, say that I'm a lefty leaning liberal snowflake. For me, the most important is education. Right? I got a public education. There's still teachers that I remember that affected me in the right way. I think we've gone away from that. We've destroyed the public education system. You know, everything is police, 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 police. Meanwhile, we don't want to pay teachers. You know, we pay them, obviously. I mean, nothing peanuts. I don't know if I can say bad words, but it's crap what we pay them.
You know, you can curse all you want. You can curse all you want if you want.
Yeah, we pay them shit.
Yes, we absolutely do.
You know, and we expect them to put up like with our kids and then 20 other kids. And then, oh, by the way, we don't have supplies, right? So the stress that we're putting on someone, and let's be real, there's times I can't stand my own kids, right? And that's the God's honest truth. I think any parent will tell you, right? It's very difficult. So we're asking one person to manage, what, 20, 30 of them? You know, how do you expect this person to do their job effectively? And so for me, that is a priority. Right? The next is, I say accountability, right? And everybody talks about accountability. And I can tell you that I didn't see it in healthcare. And it was very troubling because, you know, the Office of Inspector General, you know, always recommended, made its suggestions. Yet every time it went, you know, to Congress, they knocked it down. And now, you know, to go back to some of the fraud that happened here, we were at a point where for every dollar invested in fighting fraud, we were getting seven back. When they went back and asked for a bigger budget, they were declined. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, meanwhile, well, let's militarize the police. Let's, you know, give them these expensive vehicles, right, that are literally made for war, and then teachers got to go out and buy their own paper. So for me, if we don't address education first, we're never going to get anywhere. Then the second thing, obviously, because of my healthcare background, is healthcare. We need to fix that because it is a fact that if we're not preventive, it's going to continue down this path. And I always say, we don't have healthcare. We have a disease management system for profit, which for me makes it even worse. So if we don't take care of those two basic pillars that I think of society, if we can't educate the masses and we can't keep them healthy, then the rest is just, you know, we're spinning, right? We're spinning the wheel. We're not really going anywhere. Accountability for me has to be with technology, right? We can't do it any other way. And I've worked on government projects. It's not there. It did get better after September 11th for obvious reasons. But there's still a lot more that we need to improve. Those are just, you know, three things. I mean, I can go on and on and on, but for me, those are the very important ones, especially the teachers.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's one thing we've seen, and the pandemic has really shined a light on a lot of areas, and it's shown, you know, with parents trying to do homeschooling, I think they have more respect for what teachers do.
Absolutely.
Seeing what the frontline workers, essential workers, first responders, nurses, doctors, you know, and showing how little of a lifeline this country has for people, you know, with as far as money in the bank, aged unemployment systems in every state out there, your healthcare being tied to your employment, you know, how food desperate people are, how clothing desperate people are. And then, you know, you throw on top of it, you talked about the militarization of the police. I mean, what's your thoughts on what's been going on across the country with the Black Lives Matter protest and now talks about people pushing to defund the police?
I don't believe in bans, and I don't believe in defunding anything, right? We do need police, right? That's just the bottom line, right? So to even entertain that conversation is something that I would never do. Now, do we need to police the police? Absolutely, right? And here's where abuse needs to stop. And how are we going to hold these people accountable? For me, this immunity, you know, has got to go, right? You and I are not immune. You know, whatever we do, there's consequences. Mm-hmm. And I think if someone knows that there's no consequences, that's where the abuse happens. And we're seeing it time and time again, right? These guys get suspended with pay. I've never been suspended with pay, right?
Nope.
Yeah, and it's not going to happen, you know? And then you take a look, well, 19 incidents, 3 incidents at work and you're gone, right? So corporate America is telling us one thing, but yet the government makes exceptions. And for me, you can't do that, right? Right is right, wrong is wrong, right? Equality for everyone. I don't believe that anyone is greater or anyone is lesser. We all put our pants on one leg at a time. So how do we fix that? Training, right? We really need to look at who we're hiring and how and what are we doing to correct some of the behavior. And that allows me to get into what I think is a very important issue that is often neglected is mental health. And it took me a while to realize how important mental health was in my life, right? Unfortunately, it took me 40 years to realize that. And now it's like, it's all I talk about. It's completely neglected. You know, people rave like, oh, I got, you know, 13 visits from my health insurance. So it's one visit a month, right? We all have issues, every single one of us. And it seems like every year, those issues are becoming harder and harder to deal with. Right? Now, coupled it with a pandemic, there's going to be a third wave of this. Forget the sick, right? Our emotions, anxieties, all of that, that's not even being addressed because it doesn't get addressed, right? Because America's tough, right? And a lot of it has to come from that, though. The patriarch, right? The macho man, you know, boys don't cry because that's the way I was raised. And we got to get rid of that. You know, boys do cry. And I think we need to accept the fact that no one is normal. Right? Being atypical for me as an introvert, that's all I did was just all I wanted to be was normal. But what is normal, right? And who gets to decide that? So I think mental health is something that we as a society need to pay better attention to.
It's commendable. Very commendable.
Thank you.
So now you're running obviously against you've got Marco Rubio out there. It looks like he has at least one registered opponent on the Republican side. There's a Josue LaRose, I believe, who's signed up on the Democratic side, and another independent, Grace Granda. What would you say, kind of leaving Marco aside because he's obviously the incumbent? What would you say that you bring to the table that these other candidates do not?
Specifically to what's going on right now globally, how immigrants are being treated, I can relate to that, right? Because technically I am a dreamer, right? And I was 5 years old. I didn't raise my hand and said I want to go to America. My parents made that decision, right? And I know the pain that caused me. I know the struggles that my parents went through, and I'm still struggling, so that hasn't changed. So we see that the majority of politicians are all these CEOs, or some of them are lifetime politicians because Matt Gaetz, right? The father made a phone call and before you knew it, he was in. We need to stop that. And I think I am the person that the majority of people, specifically down here in South Florida, can say, hey, yeah, that's one of us, right? That is for me the biggest thing, that I am one of them. I'm still in the struggle. You know, nothing has changed.
All right. And then obviously no love lost with you for Marco. I noticed on your Twitter page the other day, you made
a comment. I'm brutal, man. I'm brutal.
You made a comment about him. I guess saying he is a Hispanic Uncle Tom is probably the best way to put your hashtag you tied
down. He's an Uncle Tom spick, you know, and I'll say it. And again, don't judge me by my words. Mm-hmm. Judge me by my actions. And we tell children in elementary, don't judge a book by its cover, but it's all we do as a society, right? And I think that's why we are where we are. I don't know when that happened, when all of a sudden it was just, you know, hot air coming out of someone's mouth and that's what we believe. Well, let's get back to the basics, actions. So I'm not going to, you know, my daughter's like, Dad, make sure you don't say anything. And I looked at her and go, would you support anyone that isn't being honest? She goes, no, Dad, but still, like, just don't say anything. I'm like, so are you asking me to change who I am? She sat back and she goes, well, no, you're right. And I'm not, right? You're not going to see me in the typical blue suit and all that, because that's not me. I'm not that guy. Right? So if I'm going to go out there and I'm going to talk to these issues, I'm going to talk because from experience, and number two, I'm not going to pretend to be something that I'm not. Right? Either you agree with me and my actions or you don't. Not because of the way that I'm dressed, right? Not because of the fancy clothes or the shoes, right? None of that matters. Because look at where it has gotten us. This isn't progress, plain and simple. And I say it all the time. In the 80s, Reagan was president. Bruce Springsteen was boss. GM was the largest employer with an average wage of $17 an hour. Now it's Walmart with what, $8?
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky. Help me understand how that's progress. Progress for who, right? Because the majority isn't. Well, yeah.
The Walmart shareholders, they profited. They're the ones enjoying this ride.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, we can get into a whole other topic about the stock market. There's no traders. It's the algorithms, right? The machines are at it. So they're going to want to dump more money in the stock market because it benefits them. But we don't have it. You know, I'm not that wealthy to have that luxury. And my parents never were. And the majority don't. I think one of the articles that I read said the majority of people, I think it was like 47%, cannot afford a $2,000 medical emergency. Right? That alone, I think, is a very poignant message of where we as a society have failed. Mm-hmm. Right? If we cannot sustain an emergency like that, $2,000 isn't a lot. Because you walk into a hospital, it's going to be $25,000, $30,000. And that's where you see all this other stuff.
What I found so offensive recently with the with this lockdown was how, you know, as soon as the millions of people were suddenly out of work and were truly struggling with the prospect of paying their mortgage, their rent on April 1st, and you to see a lot of the Republican politicians really struggling to take action in terms of supporting the average American citizen. Yet at the same time, you had all these corporations that came crying to Washington because much like the American citizen who did not have this gigantic stockpile of cash, well, apparently neither did Carnival Cruises because they needed a couple billion dollars and right. And neither did the airlines because they all sat there and showed up with right. With an empty wallet and a hand in Uncle Sam's pocket. It almost suddenly gave the facade that, you know, and maybe it was actually the eye opener, hopefully that we can have some change, but it was right. That a majority of our wealth is held by very few people, yep. By very few organizations. And the rest of us are patting ourselves on the back that this is the greatest country in the world. This is the greatest system known to mankind and that we're all doing great because we all have MacBooks and we all have nice cars. Unfortunately, none of us have any money in the bank.
Right.
We're all living paycheck to paycheck.
Absolutely.
The corporations that were sitting there like a Walmart that were sitting there paying their people as little as possible. None of us were doing well. And it's amazing how, you know, even with the, you know, the progress that we've made, how many American citizens are still hurting and how you are still getting such resistance from Washington, specifically, Marco Rubio and his friends, to sit there and help the American people. It is almost as if, there is just this, this grandiose pleasure that they have in supporting corporations. But if the aid is going to actual people, it's oh no, that's socialism. We have corporate socialism. That is the basis of our economy. If yeah. Wall Street decides to make too many risky bets and they need to have, like you said, have daddy show up and, you know, and pay their bills, they are more than happy to take that cash and Congress is more than happy to write the checks. But when it comes to helping out the people, they got a real hesitancy for it.
And you're right, because I just took a look at if you see some of the reports for Rubio, he had like $1 million on cash. And when you take a look at the donations, the majority are PACs. So right. He's a complete puppet.
Of course.
But here's the thing, like, whose fault is this, right? The framers constructed, you know, this the machination that were supposed to defend us for the rest, right, in perpetuity. We, the people. Right? If that's a socialistic mantra in and of itself, right? Because it's speaking in the collective, but the collective doesn't get up. Because everyone's with this hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil, my life is great, you know, I drive my nice car. And they ignore, and I don't watch the news because no news is good news. And meanwhile, the greatest fleecing of the working class continues. And we saw this in 2008. You know, TARP was what, $800 billion, right?
That's what they admitted to.
That's what, exactly, right? And where did it go? It went to the banks. And then right after that, you had Wells Fargo was committing fraud. You had Deutsche Bank, right? So after we bailed all these guys out, they went right back to it. And what changed? Nothing. Because we continue to fail and not exercise that one right that is supposed to make us greater than everybody else, the ability to vote.
Well, I hope people go out and vote for you.
Thank you.
So tell our listeners if they want to follow you, if they want to support you, how can they do that?
So it's going to be Carlos for Senate. And vote for Carlos. You guys are Napoleon Dynamite?
Yes.
Yes.
I made a shirt just like that. I waited an entire year to get that domain name. I will say I haven't published a lot of the stuff yet because I was preparing to leave the automotive industry. So I opened up a media company. So I got to walk a fine line because I'm actively campaigning. All right. I don't want anything to come off as a, you know, self-interest or self-dealing. So I'm still consulting with my attorney as far as when I can, you know, click everything on and make sure that everything is separated so that there's no appearance, right, of any impropriety.
Which is refreshing in and of itself, given what we see go on in the current administration.
Right?
The fact that you're actually taking the steps to not break the law. Puts your heads and tails above a lot of people right now. Well,
let us know when all that stuff goes live because we want to let all of our listeners know.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, guys. It's a pleasure. Hopefully, you know, we can do
pleasure is ours.
Yep. Deeper into campaign season, we'll keep our fingers crossed for 2020 that there's still a country after this November. if so, we're definitely behind you for 2022. So thank you very much for joining us.
Have a great evening. Take care and stay safe. Okay.
All right. You too. Take care.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
Well, I listen. I like the guy.
The guy too.
He's very realistic about his chances. You know, he realizes he's got a minimal chance. But listen, part of the reason this is the greatest country on the planet is the ability for the small man to rise up and do great things.
Well, think about it this way: in 2014, there was a shithead whose greatest claim to fame was that they had been on The Apprentice. And they sat there and said to themselves, I could run for president. Not that I want to win, but I just want to simply build my brand. And that shithead right now is sitting in Washington trying to figure out what happened in Tulsa. So you don't need to have this great pedigree capture the hearts and minds of the American people. Right.
So that was Carlos Barbarena. Again, you can find him at carlosforsenate.com. He is also on Twitter. You can follow him there. But again, I mean, you look at basically a self-made man, as he mentioned. He came to this country with his parents in 1980. No college education, just graduated high school. Taught himself IT. He's been in healthcare. He's been in the automotive industry. He's been in general practice, and he started a few of his own companies and is now going to run for Senate. You have to think Rubio's seat is one of the more vulnerable ones out there because he just is his constituents really at this point seem to hate him. And I think a lot of them, he got swept in with everything that happened in 2016. And I think seeing as how his constituents have been treating him over the past couple of years, I think a lot of people really regret that vote.
I think that the lesson that we've learned from 2016 is the requirement to provide quality candidates. I think that one of the reasons, you know, one of the mistakes that the Democrats made in 2016 was they lost the finger on the pulse of their base. They sat there and just assumed that Hillary was incredibly popular because Obama was incredibly popular. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they were arrogant. And I think a lot of people voted for Trump simply because he was not Hillary. I think we learned the lesson. Hopefully a lot of people now will vote for Joe Biden because he's not Donald Trump. But I also think that, and this is one of the most important reasons why people should be going out to vote, is because a lot of the influence that happens on your life is controlled not just by the presidency, but also at, you know, what do they call those down ballot options?
Yep. Yeah.
Where it's your, you know, it's your congressmen, it's your senators, it's your state senators, it's your city councilmen, your town councilmen. If you live in bumfuck, it's your, in New York, America, you're voting for your sheriffs or your ombudsman or whatever the fucking people is. It's these people do have an impact on your day-to-day life. And by passing up the opportunity to vote, you're allowing the few to decide the lives of the many. I may get that printed up on a business card or a hashtag, but Jesus, did that sound
good? Well, it's the truth, though, because I think we see more and more every day how who your sheriff is impacts you, who your mm-hmm. city council person is impacts you, your state senator, your state representative. So when you know, if you don't go to the polls because I don't like Donald Trump, I don't like Joe Biden, you know, the ripple effect is huge from that. And especially right. You see such an ineffective president like we have right now, you know, everything's pretty much controlled by, you know, the Congress. And correct. So that's why nothing gets done, because you have a Republican Senate and a Democratic House.
And also one of the points that that Carlos made that I think is important is the fact of, you know, shame on us, the American people, because we bitch and complain about how we hate the incumbent. But yes, the real election rate, don't spill your beer. I will just.
Sorry.
Right, good. But the re-election rate for incumbents is so ludicrously high. It's the fact that we like to spend 2, 4, 6 years bitching about the person that we've elected. But when we go into the voting booth and click a machine that's being controlled by the Russians, you know, it's the idea that, you know, most of us go in there and sit there and go, well, I see two names. Who do I know? Well, you know, this guy I'm familiar with. I'm just going to vote for this person again. And then we walk out and we bitch and complain that the person we just voted for is fucking us over for their next term.
Well, wouldn't you say it starts even before that? It starts in the primary process where people just don't even bother to get involved in the primary. Like, I've seen some people post their ballot online where they have written in the name of like a good friend on their election ballot. That's throwing a vote away, in my opinion. But again, I mean, you know, it's a primary, people can do what they want, but don't you feel it starts somewhat in the primary election?
Hold on. Cause I'm feeling attacked on that one.
Why is that?
Because this past week, New York had their primary and I voted for my girl, Tulsi Gabbard.
Okay.
Wife number three, Tulsi, I'm here. Call me. I knew Biden was going to get the primary, yeah. So I was okay throwing that vote. But then and this is one of the, you know, the lessons that I've learned over the past year is just how important it is for, you know, the down ballot options. Is I was voting for city councilman, and then when I got to the point of my representative, I believe it was in Congress, not state. The state senate, right?
Yes.
I sat there and said, I am not familiar with either of these names, and I don't want to just vote for the incumbent because I'm familiar with that name. So who on this planet do I trust to represent me in the U.S. Congress? And I thought of one person, and that's the person whose face I am staring at right now. That is yours.
Well, thank you. Although I will say, if nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve.
Why not?
It depends on what the pay is. I mean, I'm not really getting paid anything right now, so.
Yeah, but do you realize the kickbacks you would get from the PACs?
That's true.
Private planes. Yeah, listen, you could fly them to Lolita Express.
Well, in the meantime, let's get back into the podcast here. We definitely will have Carlos on again in the future.
Absolutely. He was fun. He was fun.
Yes. But let's get caught up with This Week in Racism.
Week
in
Racism.
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 So this is a little bit of a flashback to last week. We had talked about former CrossFit CEO Greg Glassman, who had resigned due to racist comments and tweets he made. Well, he has now agreed to sell the company after allegations of rampant sexual harassment have come to light. A recent New York Times report documented how Glassman talked about sexual encounters in detail and tried to take photos of women's breasts while male employees allegedly ranked female CrossFit athletes by how much they would like to sleep with them. Former CrossFit employee Andy Stumpf recently detailed on a podcast how Glassman aggressively pursued female staffers who kept quiet because they were, quote, ruled by fear of retribution. Stumpf also recalled that Glassman once told a female staffer he was pursuing that he hoped her boyfriend, who was in the military and deployed overseas, would die serving his country.
No.
So not just a racist, a horrible person all around. Let's see.
Terrible.
What else? Colgate has announced its review of its toothpaste brand Darlie, which once featured a smiling man in blackface. The popular brand, which is sold in China, the Philippines, Thailand, and other Asian countries, has long been criticized for using racist imagery. The brand is marketed in Chinese as Black Person Toothpaste and was sold using the racial epithet Darkie until its name was changed, get this, in 1989. Not that long ago. A Georgia cop has been fired for a Facebook comment calling for the hanging of five Black people who were involved in the 2016 murder of a white grandmother. Officer Robert Skipper Dunn worked part-time for the Rossville PD prior to his termination. He stated that his post wasn't racist and he would have called for the perpetrators to be hanged regardless of their color. In Holton, Kansas, a Black couple in a Walmart parking lot were accused of shoplifting by the local sheriff's department, despite the fact they had a receipt for what they had purchased. In Baltimore, Maryland, a viral video showed a manager at Greek restaurant Uzu Bay denying entry to a Black woman and her son, stating that the boy did not meet the restaurant's dress code, despite there being a white boy seated in the restaurant with a similar outfit. And then in Indiana, Allen County Councilman Larry Brown was caught on microphone stating that people who participated in recent Black Lives Matter-inspired protests are, quote, uneducated, adding that, quote, unfortunately, they breed. Another example of the importance of voting for your county councilman. Probably the worst one of the week, though, that will go to Greg Baxter, owner of ProClean Chimney Service in Arroyo Grande, California, who was caught on video using racial slurs against a African-American Walgreens manager that had asked him to put on a mask before coming into the store. Baxter called the manager the N-word, told him he should, quote, fetch him some water, and called him Keezy, which is the name of one of the slaves in the movie Roots. The manager, Harold Brown, also claims that Baxter returned to the store to demand that the video be taken down and use the N-word again.
Jesus Christ, so, that is awful.
As we surmised with the world opening back up, racism is back in force and people are horrible. I know, it brings you down.
But you want to know something?
What
makes me feel better?
What's that?
is that these stories are being recorded, documented, and they are being passed around the internet. Right now there are people in, what was that shit town with the Greek restaurant?
That was Baltimore, Maryland. Yeah.
Like I said, shit town. But there are people in Baltimore right now deciding to go out for dinner, not going to Uzo Mi Uzo Uzo, and saying to themselves, you know what? Fuck that racist piece of shit place. Let's not go there.
Well, and the two managers involved at Uzu Bay apparently were fired.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Boycott that place.
It is interesting, though. You are seeing less and less of this administrative leave that everybody was put on previously. Oh. And now people are actually getting fired for their actions. So that is at least a small step forward.
It is what I would like to call forward progress. We are making progress. It's not like flipping your pillow from the warm side to the cold side. It's not going to be an immediate impact like that, but we are making progress. Things are going to be getting better. I think you are seeing the racists sit there and, still feel comfortable being proud, but they're going to start seeing the price, and you're seeing it right now. Fuck Uzo Bay.
Uzo Bay.
Fuck them. Fuck Uzo Bay. Fuck them.
All right.
Thank you.
Speaking of progress, as we have mentioned, New York City had progressed to phase two, which meant that the wife and I felt comfortable enough to go drive up and visit my podcast friend Brian. And we made a trip out to Coney Island on Saturday.
First off, and this is something that I did not even realize, is that you guys broke quarantine.
Did we now?
It's what your wife said to me. She said this was her first day out in months, that you guys had been really truly following the orders of social distancing, leaving the house only for emergencies, like supermarket, Home Depot in your case, liquor store in her case. And the fact is that you had not, gone to any of the outdoor dining that Pennsylvania had approved in your county. And I was just genuinely honored that the first time that you guys decided, you know what, let's test out the outdoor world, you came and visited me. It really meant a lot.
First person we thought about.
And I appreciate that.
What is shocking to me is I'm not someone who drives in New York City. I had to years ago for work, and I just absolutely hate it. Absolutely hate it. How was your experience? It was insane because we come up the New Jersey Turnpike. We cross the two bridges there. What, we cross the Gothels? Is that how you say it?
Gothels. The Gothels goes into Staten Island. Staten Island over the Verrazanos.
Exactly. I have never in my life, regardless of time of day, been able to drive the speed limit on those bridges. And yes, it was just clear sailing over both of them.
I got to say this. I mean, we went through hell in New York City. As I pointed out earlier, the refrigerated trucks.
You did mention that, yes. Forklift.
By the way, kudos on keeping your composure.
Thank you.
I was locked in seeing your reaction on that. But it's we've been through hell. We are out of hell. In fact, we are one of the safest places, New York State as a whole, one of the safest places in terms of the coronavirus exposure right now. What makes me truly happy is that people are genuinely following the quarantine. They're following social distancing guidelines. It's the fact that you go to New York City now and most people are home.
We went to Coney Island. Beautiful day on Saturday. Sun was out, wasn't too hot. But people weren't crowding together. People, correct, for the most part, had on masks. If they were close to people, if they were in stores or restaurants, they definitely had their mask on. And it was just great.
Kudos, much respect to Coney Island Brewery.
Yes, they were selling beer out in front Let me tell you, we got ourselves some hot dogs from Nathan's Hot Dogs, got ourselves some ice cold beer from Coney Island Brewery, and we're able to just really just sit out on the sidewalk eating a hot dog and drinking a cold beer. And it was, listen, it was the best time I've had since this pandemic started.
Yeah, it was, you know, they were, you know, like you said, everybody was, you know, people were wearing masks, people were social distancing. The brewery, they were selling the to-go beers. You couldn't just sit there and, you know, you probably could now because they have that outdoor space. But on Saturday, it was take your beers, please go. We said, yes, we'll go. We walked about 20 feet over and we found a bench and sat there and had ourselves a good time. I do have a question for you. How terribly sunburned were you on Sunday when you woke up?
Surprisingly, not as bad as I thought I would be. I've got a little sunburn on my neck, but arms, legs are good. You were a little pink, my friend.
The top of my ears burned. arms burned. Like you can, I don't know if you can see, but the reddish hue that's coming off. And then ultimately, and this was the bitch. Was the calves?
Yeah, your legs look pretty bad. Your legs look painful.
Well, I'll tell you, I didn't realize until the next day was the fact that we spent a lot of the afternoon with your wife and you sitting on the bench. I was standing facing you guys,
so the sun was just hitting right behind me. Yeah,
right in the back, just toasting my legs like a little hot dog. Oh, did we have a fun time. What a fun time.
One thing that I will say is if you watch the video, I've got this little swoop of hair that comes down over my forehead. I did end up with a tan line on my forehead from my hair. I've never seen
that. That's awesome.
It was great. Like the rest of my forehead was red and then just pale where the hair is.
There's nothing wrong with that. Nope. And by the way, nice haircut, I'd like to point out.
I was able to get a haircut from my good friend Carlos, not the Carlos we just interviewed, another Carlos. But salons actually open up again in Philly this Friday, the 26th. So my salon has already mentioned how they're going to be social distancing. So at least I will actually be able to go out in public and get my haircut next time.
So your hair salons are not open?
They are not open. They will open. They're allowed to open on Friday. They were initially
my salon's open on Monday.
They were initially supposed to be able to open when we went to the yellow phase, and then the governor changed his mind and closed salons and nail spas and barbershops and whatnot. And it pissed a lot of people off because they were like, you were going to let us open. Now you didn't. So that's why even though Philly won't be in green till July 3rd, they have okayed salons to open a week earlier.
Got it. Well, listen, I think the one thing we learned about Michigan, you know, people really want their haircuts.
That is for sure. They are willing to get assault rifles and go to the Capitol for the right to do so.
Whereas in New York, when we can't get a haircut, we just do it ourselves.
Oh, it looks sticky. It's nice. Nice and tight, my friend. Nice and tight.
It looks like a bowl. It looks like a fucking bowl cut.
Can I ask you something?
Of course you can.
What are you reading?
What am I reading, Ron? It's almost like you know what the answer is going to be.
Almost.
This week I started reading. The title of the book is called, hold on, I had it written down.
Is it The Room Where It Happens?
The name of the book is The Room Where It Happens by John Bolton, former national security advisor to Donald Trump. Wasn't he a UN ambassador at one point or no?
Yes, he was.
Wasn't he not in the Bush administration?
I believe so.
Does he or does he not look like Wilford Brimley if he never got diabetes?
Yes, he looks like a very thin Wilford Brimley.
Does he resemble a walrus?
Very close, yes.
Is he trying to position himself as someone who is not in favor of Donald Trump, yet somehow still a total scumbag?
I don't think he's trying to position himself that way, but he's definitely coming across that way. Yes.
How far into the book are you?
I have to admit, I only got probably about 30 pages into the book when I just got completely aggravated with him.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Are you going to finish or did you just drop it?
I've dropped it. I don't know if I'll go back to it.
I'm going to power through it for you. I am probably, I would say, and this will give it away. I'm currently reading it on my iPad, and on the font size that is most comfortable for these advanced aged eyeballs, there's about 1,100 pages.
Oof! So it's about twice the size of what it normally is.
Yeah, I'm right now about, I would say, on page 200.
You know, and I think it's important to point out that we did not buy the book. We did not put money in John Bolton's pocket. Someone put it up on a Google Drive online.
We received a
screener's copy, yes. And if any of you would like a screener's copy as well, just go to ronandbrianpodcast.com and go to the contact us page, and we'd be happy to share that Google Drive with you.
We went on the internet and we said we would like to have some sharks with some freaking lasers.
the arrogance that comes across, and you know, and he still takes the advantage to bash the Obama administration, to bash Joe Biden, to bash Hillary Clinton. So it is, you know, I don't feel that he learned anything. I think he is, if anything, he is upset over the way Donald Trump and the administration treated him. And that's why he wrote this book.
All right. The problem I have with him is this. It's two-pronged. There is that he is the vocal representative right now of conservatives, Republicans, people who have a different outlook on the country than you and I tend to look at things. The fact that my issue with him is that he has zero respect for Donald Trump.
Correct.
It is very clear. At any opportunity he has, he will throw in references to just the haphazard nature of how Donald Trump runs things, how he is utterly incapable of making a decision. It is constantly, I'm on this side, I'm going to do this, I think I'm going to do that. How easy it is to sway Donald Trump. You tell him at 9 o'clock, I think you should do this. He watches Fox News, and the next morning it's, oh, no. You know what? A lot of people are saying we should do that. And it literally is what Sean Hannity said at 9:05 on his show. So John Bolton literally will take any opportunity he has to bash Trump. The problem I have is that he was one of these people, and the administration is filled with them and has been, especially considering the fucking rotation of people in, people out, of genuine people who are true to their beliefs, who sit there and say, I am going to work with this man and hopefully steer things into the right direction, without accepting that it is absolutely impossible to do that with Donald Trump. That he is incapable of holding any ideological belief, that all his actions, and Bolton, you know, the part I'm up to is Bolton's talking about the bromance that took place between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un, mm-hmm. or as I like to call him, Un Jong Kim. And the issue is just, it's the fact that Trump was all about, how is this going to play in the media? How is this going, you know, how can I use this to kind of build my legacy? And that he was not in any way thinking, is this good for America? Is this good for the world? That, you know, he walked in there and, you know, previous generations, previous presidencies have all poorly handled North Korea. I'm not going to lie. You know, during the Obama administration, there was absolutely no sense of, there was no sense of a deterrent towards North Korea. It was, we will negotiate, we will lower economic sanctions, we will work with you, but under no circumstances would you believe that there is any red line in the sand, is that the phrase, or
we'll make it a phrase.
Something?
It could be. No? I'm not quite sure.
the point being is the fact that, like, you suddenly have this Republican who's sitting there saying, we're going to use military, we're going to blow them up, we're going to, you know, like, hell has no fury. What was the phrase that he used? He's like...
That would be fire and fury, unlike which the world has never seen before.
And yet, when presented with the opportunity of meeting him, Trump was literally giddy like a schoolboy at the idea that he was going to be nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize because he was going to be the guy who was going to get the North Koreans to denuclearize. But when there was ever any talk of, okay, we need actual concrete rules to prove the denuclearization, Trump just out there was like, well, we already got our picture, so let's just move on. And it's the fact you've got these fucking people like Bolton who are going into this administration with the idea of, we're going to make things happen, without accepting that this guy's a fucking idiot. And I'm not talking about Kim Jong-un. The fact is, he is incapable of representing what's best for this country, regardless of whether you're Democratic or Republican. He is literally one of the most self-serving individuals that has ever sat behind the Resolute desk.
Right. And I guess maybe that's what bugs me about the book is, like, it really seems like he is writing a lot, you know, along the lines of, hey, you guys aren't going to believe this, but Donald Trump isn't qualified to be president. Like, no fucking shit. Like, most of us realize that prior to even the election happening. And for him to be like, and again, I don't know that he tells us anything that we don't already know, that all Donald Trump does is try and make deals across the world that are going to help him get reelected, that Donald Trump just does things that serve himself, that there is no cognizant plan, that there is turnover. There was nothing I saw. And for him to do these interviews and to be like, well, why didn't you come forth, you know, during the impeachment hearings? And he's like, well, I wasn't going to help the Democrats, you know, drive their truck into a ditch. So again, if when pressed on it, he shows that he's just going to play partisan politics regardless. He's not someone who's going to put the country ahead of party. He is someone that just can't put Donald Trump ahead of himself.
But it's worse. It's not even a country ahead of party, because if Donald Trump was impeached, Mike Pence would become president, and Bolton speaks highly of Pence at every opportunity. So you would think that if he is a true Republican and he truly believes in his ideals, that he would want Trump to be impeached so that Mike Pence, somebody who is more aligned with his values, would become president. But he didn't do that. No. He didn't have the balls. He kept his mouth shut. Like a little bunker bitch that he... Oh, sorry.
He's not the bunker bitch. He's just a bitch. He's the Bolton
bitch.
He's
a hashtag walrus bitch.
I like that. Hashtag walrus bitch. We're going to start that.
I'm
going to
tell you something. This crowler just kicked in about 5 minutes ago.
Well, you know what that means.
How many of these can I drink at a time?
However many you'd like. I mean, it's up to you, my friend. 32 ounces of liquid refreshment. Well, if
you know what, hold on a second. You know what I'm going to do?
What's that?
We're going to cut this episode off. I think we
have to go to the Patreon. Right? If the beer is kicking in, that tells me it's time to move over to the Patreon episode.
We're going to go to the Patreon, and I'm going to crack open another one of these crowlers.
All right. If you want to be part of the Patreon, go to RonAndBrianPodcast.com. Upper right-hand corner, there's a link called Become a Patron. You can become a patron as low as $5, get access to great additional content, get some swag, listen to Brian's drunk ramblings in a few minutes.
I haven't had a drink since Saturday.
Really?
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's only Wednesday. I mean, I don't know if you should pat yourself on the back too hard.
Oh, no. Okay, well, you know what? I will say this. Okay. Is the fact that during this lockdown, especially... I would say the last 6 weeks or so, I was pretty much drinking every night.
All right.
Now, not out of control drinking, but there was not a day that I could think of. I would maybe drink 5 out of 7 nights.
I'll give you a little credit then.
So, but you know what? I'm doing another crowler, and we are going to have a insane patron.
We're
this Patreon's going to be fucking crazy. Ron, all right. take us out.
All right, we're going to roll out of here. We would like to once again thank Carlos Barbarena for coming on the show. Go to carlosforsenate.com. Catch you on the Patreon if you're a patron. Otherwise, we will catch you next week, everybody.